Ladies and gentlemen, we present at this time the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan.
Father Coughlin delivers his address entitled, Our Problem is in America. It is our pleasure to present the Shrine of the Little Flower Male Choristers. These 60 boys and men are recruited from the Shrine School and the neighborhood. Under the direction of Mr. Cyril Guthrow, they will sing for you the Sanctus from the Mass of Maria Auxilium Christianorum.
This afternoon, Father Coughlin will speak to you on a subject which touches upon European affairs and our relation to the present crisis. This address, according to our estimate, will evoke more controversy than those which he previously delivered. He takes a bold stand for Christianity and Americanism. The current events and historical background used in this address challenge the interest of all listeners. Please be informed that a copy of this address is yours for the asking. Write directly to Father Coughlin at Woodward and 12 Mile Road, Royal Oak, Michigan. Last Sunday, Father Coughlin spoke to you about a nationwide anti-war contest. He has entrusted me with the conduct of this great competition. Therefore, as contest manager, permit me for a few moments to give you the facts concerning this most worthy enterprise. $16,000 in cash prizes will be paid to 135 readers of Social Justice Magazine between today and July 1st. These handsome awards, 135 of them, will go to winners in the Social Justice Magazine Anti-War Essay Contest. You can win as high as $1,500 in cash by writing a short essay on the attitude America should take on foreign war. This great nationwide educational competition is for every American or Canadian, regardless of race or creed, above the fourth school grade. In fact, there are 9 separate and distinct contests divided according to the age and educational qualifications of contestants. For school pupils, the division is made by grade from the 5th to the 12th inclusively. Each grade has its own topic upon which essays will be written. Each grade has its own separate list of cash prizes. A contestant in one grade will not in any way be in competition with pupils in higher or lower grades. And consider for a moment these substantial cash prizes. Pupils of the 5th, 6th, and 7th grades who send in the best essays on America's attitude towards foreign war will win grand prizes of $500. Grand prizes for the 8th, 9th, and 10th grades are $700, $800, and $900 respectively. And the grand prizes for the 11th and 12th grades are $900 and $1,000 respectively. The total of cash prizes to be awarded to school pupils is $12,250. And now for adults, those who are no longer school pupils. Grown-up men and women in the United States and Canada will compete for $3,750 in cash prizes in the All-American division of this great contest. The topic is, how best can America be kept out of war? An adult in the All-American division will in no way be in competition with school pupils. All essays submitted in the contest, which officially opens on April 3rd, will be judged by a select board of judges, of which Father Coughlin will act as chairman. Enter this great contest today. Write personally to Father Coughlin, Royal Oak, Michigan. Full instructions will be sent you immediately. Remember, you have as good a chance to win a substantial cash prize as any person in the United States or Canada. Parents, be sure to have your children enter the social justice anti-war contest at once. Besides affording them an opportunity to reap neat fortunes in cash, it will make them better Americans. Teachers of grade schools will kindly withhold entry of their pupils until they receive a letter from Father Coughlin with full instructions within the next few days. And here's something important. For the convenience of those of the radio audience who are not subscribers to Social Justice Magazine, a trial subscription of 3 months will be given you if you enter the anti-war contest. This trial subscription is absolutely free to all persons who are not now subscribers and who enter the anti-war contest at once. Just write to Father Coughlin today. State in your letter that you wish to compete for the cash prizes in the anti-war essay contest. Please be sure to write Contest Department in the lower left-hand corner of your envelope. Immediately your letter is received, you will be placed on the subscription list for 3 months, free, and all instructions regarding the anti-war essay contest will be sent you. Remember, you can win $1,500 by June the 10th, the closing date of the contest. So, write to Father Coughlin today. And now, Father Coughlin, in his address, Our Problem is in America.
Good afternoon, my friends. Yesterday, New York was the scene of another parade. Many thousands of people, innocent people, duped by propaganda and leftist leadership, joined the procession to protest against Hitler's seizure of Czechoslovakia. The entire world sympathizes with the Czech people. Since the 15th century until the signing of the Peace Treaty of Versailles, this nation was without an autonomous government. For 20 years, this synthetic republic, torn with internal dissension and besieged with external aggression, dissolved into thin air without a shot having been fired. Thus we mark the passing of another so-called democracy. Once again, therefore, the cry is raised in America to save democracy. However, it is raised mostly by those who are more interested in destroying Germany than they are in restoring Czechoslovakia. It is no wonder that a great sector of American opinion questions the motives of the men and women who were responsible for yesterday's parade. Inspect the records, and you will find that these professional sympathizers are not so much concerned with democracy as they are with other hidden objectives. They are the same group that was silent when Christians were persecuted unto death in Mexico in the name of democracy. They are the same group that for 6 years has been busy boycotting more than 60 million Christians, Catholic and Protestant, resident in the Third Reich in the name of democracy. They are the same group that openly supported the loyalist communists in Spain, interesting themselves to the extent of organizing men, money, and propaganda in America to help murder priests, nuns, and civilians in the name of democracy. They are the same group that applauded the recognition of the blood-drenched flag of Soviet Russia and failed to protest the murder of more than 20 million Christians in the name of democracy. They are the same group that aided and abetted the growth of radicalism in America, both in the ranks of government and labor, in the name of democracy. For these persons, the dissolution of Czechoslovakia is but a convenient occasion to further the cause of tyranny and aggression in the name of democracy. An occasion to sound the drums of international war with the hope of stimulating the wicked passion of hate in the breasts of innocent citizens in the name of democracy. I am of the opinion that there are a sufficient number of Americans ready to challenge them, because we suspect the subversive motives which they hide under the sanctimonious veil of their sympathy. How many in this audience are aware that artificial synthetic Republic of Czechoslovakia was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? Although its originators understood that Slovakian water and Czech oil were never intended to mix, although this young republic was doomed to dissolution from the outset because it was established under the false principle of racial conflict within the precincts of a nation, its creators cared not so long as it served their purpose. Again, I repeat, our sympathies are extended both to the Czechs and to the Slovaks, whom miscreants throughout the ages have used as pawns upon the chessboard of politics. Nevertheless, granted that the Slovaks did not invite Hitler to assimilate their territory, granted that this 20th century Napoleon rode roughshod over every liberty of the Czechs, granted that all his territorial acquisitions and economic conquests of the past 2 weeks not only shocked the world, but created a threat to the so-called democracies of Europe, France and Russia, and to the well-advertised democracy of Great Britain, this does not offer a valid reason why we Americans should entangle ourselves in foreign affairs which inevitably lead to war. Once again, may I inform you that Great Britain is not a democracy in any sense of the word. It is an empire of 486 million persons who are ruled, regulated, and in some instances exploited by the members of the British Parliament, elected to office by no more than 45 million residents of England and Scotland. Nor is France a democracy. It too is an empire boasting of more than 100 million population resident outside Europe. A population that was subjugated by cannon, bayonet, and intrigue. Nor is Russia a democracy. Its 1 million persons are dominated by a party of communists numbering less than 2 million. A political party which has outlawed Christianity and religion. A political party which has all but crushed the last vestige of liberty from the bodies and souls of the Russians whom they victimized with their atheism. If the conscience of Americans is offended because the principles of real democracy, of self-determination, of home rule, have been crushed to earth by the iron heel of the German stormtroopers, let our indignation be impartial and therefore virtuous. Let us lament over the plight of the British, French, and Russian victims of conquest, who since the Battle of Plassey in 1757 to the massacre of Moscow in 1923, have been appealing for liberty and justice and sympathy to the deafened ears of civilization. If the imperial conquest by Great Britain and France and the diabolical persecution by Soviet Russia are the outstanding examples of European democracy, then it is my opinion that the sooner that type of hypocrisy perishes from the face of the earth, the better for all mankind. Only the unlettered or dishonest American identifies our theories of democracy with the political and economic slavery upon which these types in Europe have been constructed. Instead of working ourselves to a point of frenzy in behalf of the European democracies, we should express our anxiety because uninformed thousands of Americans are prone to follow a warmongering leadership in New York and elsewhere. Have the European nations treated Americans justly? For the past 20 years, they've been molding cannons, building battleships, constructing marginal lines, and spending billions upon billions of dollars in preparation for the forthcoming war that was hatched at the unjust Treaty of Versailles. How these nations repaid us the debts which they owe. Millions upon millions of dollars were loaned by the United States of America for Germany's rehabilitation following the World War. These obligations were repudiated. Billions upon billions of dollars were loaned to England and France before our entrance into the World War, during our participation in it, and again after the peace treaty of Versailles. Were these obligations honored? Since 1918, more than $91 million was loaned to the Republic of Czechoslovakia. More than 20 years have elapsed, and not one penny even of the interest on that loan has been repaid. A loan which now amounts to $193,576,596. In all, more than $30 billion have been poured into Europe by you, the American taxpayers, and all we have received in return is the gift of communist radicals, imported propagandists, and expatriated refugees. These debts are being borne by you, the taxpayers of America. These repudiated loans are partly the cause why economic chaos has supplanted economic democracy in this nation, why a tyranny of finance has Hitlerized your homes, your farms, your factories, your insurance corporations, why you have been forced to goose step, either in the standing army of unemployment or in the reserve forces of bankruptcy. Whether you know it or not, you Americans, through the voice of your government, have been taught to hail the international bankers. All that is left of us, of democracy, is its political aspect. Will you suffer the propagandists, the warmongers, to use Czechoslovakia as a springboard to hurl you into a European cauldron of war and thereby sacrifice all that remains of our liberties, including our political democracy? Already we have sacrificed enough to no avail. 20 years ago, we failed to make the world safe for democracy. 20 years ago, we were partially instrumental in producing the chaos and worldwide depression which have encompassed us. From a financial consideration, it has been estimated that over and above the repudiated debts of Europe, a world war cost you, the taxpayers of this nation, $51 billion in actual money spent for destruction, and approximately $250 billion represented in a loss of production in our fields and factories. $250 billion worth of wealth, which we did not create, worth of wages which were not paid as a result of the worldwide depression. Oh, if the dead could but return, the dead whose bodies were mangled by shrapnel and bayonet, there would be 10 million voices raised at this moment on every frontier in Europe and on the island shores of England to plead with their people to abandon the policies of futile slaughter. Ask the impoverished Frenchman or the tax-burdened Englishman what benefit the world war produced. He will tell you that wars settle nothing, that they produce nothing but misery and devastation. And he'll count for you not only the 10 million lives that were lost, but the 20 million who were maimed and injured, the 13 million reported as missing, the 10 million refugees who were despoiled of their property and citizenship, the 7 million orphan boys and girls who were scattered, wandering over the face of the earth, and the 6 million babies who were born nameless and destitute, all the products of the world war, all in the name of democracy. Do you appreciate what these numbers mean? Pause to picturize them. If for yesterday's parade in New York City, we could substitute the parade of the 10 million dead soldiers marching from sunrise to sunset five abreast, they would require 92 days to pass a given point, and they would raise their voice in loud acclaim to inform the world that wars are the great destroyers, and catchwords like democracy are the great betrayers. Already, you taxpayers of America are overburdened with debt. Do you recognize that more than 60 cents of every tax dollar you contribute to government is used to defray the expenses of the last war and to prepare for the next? Do you recognize that the cost of our entrance into another world war will mean the abolition of private industry and of representative government? I ask you, has war become our chief industry? Has slaughter become our chief concern? Will the propaganda which once seduced us to leave our own in order to make the world safe for democracy, will this same propaganda succeed again? Answer these questions to the satisfaction of your conscience and then ask yourselves, shall we take the first steps which lead to the final step of destruction? Shall we be patient with the internationalists, the disturbers, and the professional agitators who are more interested in Czechoslovakia and in Europe than they are in the reconstruction of America? Every Christian American has a heart that is easily attuned to the chords of sympathy. It is natural for us to respond to the victims of persecution wherever they may be. But why not permit charity and sympathy to begin at home? Why close our eyes and hearts to the 22 million worse than refugees sentenced to live upon dole rations in our midst? Why shut our ears to the pleas of 12 million jobless working men whom our undemocratic financial system practically has despoiled of their right to life, liberty, and happiness? Why permit the internationalists and warmongers who are more concerned with the minorities of Europe to distract our attention from our own problems? Last week, the New York Daily News, the largest paper in circulation in America, said, there's a great deal of breast-beating among the local Reds and their fellow travelers over the latest development. As we get it, the Red interpretation is that Chamberlain and Delage are to blame, and the Czechoslovakia's blow-up is felt to be another move in a British-French plot to stick Hitler and Russia. We can't get so excited about it, and don't see why other Americans should. My friends, the Daily News is right. This is an affair for us to watch and not to mix in. It is right when it says that the agitators are either Reds or sympathizers with the Reds. If they were not Red sympathizers, long since they would have paraded against the persecution of 150 million or more Christians in Russia. Long since they would have demanded that if this government sees fit to place a 25% punitive tax on German imports, it would have put at least a 50% restrictive tax on Russian goods. If they were honest, those over the past 6 years have boasted in the public press that they were walking to boycott Germany. If they were honest, they would have been interested during the past 20 years in boycotting Russia. These things have not been done. These things they will not do because they are using Czechoslovakia, democracy, Hitler, aggression, and all such catchwords to play upon the pipes of American sentiment in behalf of communist internationalism. Their propaganda grows apace. But meanwhile, the Americans who believe in the policies of Christ, the Prince of Peace, are becoming more convinced that they are being victimized by Christ's enemy, who goeth about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour, roaring in the press, roaring on the radio, and roaring from the silver screen. He is the same father of lies today as he was yesterday. He pursues the identical policies of destruction under the mask of sympathy, charity, and humanitarianism, the same which he employed in the instance of the temptation of our first parents. And he offers to his victims the same fruit of deception, which if they eat thereof, they will be cast from the Garden of Eden. Be not deceived. The enemies of the Prince of Peace are motivated by the single desire to devour our liberty, our morals, our homes, our farms, our industries. Yes, and our immortal souls. Their breed has not changed one iota from their ancestors, whom Christ condemned. He characterized them as sons of the devil and predicted that the desires of your father you will do. My fellow citizen, we are either with Christ, the Prince of Peace, or we are against him. There's no middle ground. From a historical viewpoint, it is time that the nations of the world learn the lesson that no permanent peace can be brought about by protecting injustice and by perpetrating more of them through the instrumentality of such mockeries as the Peace Treaty of Versailles. If we are content to weigh history in the scale of facts instead of fancy, this statement will become clear. However, we will be disinclined to meddle in European affairs, which are partly the result of that iniquitous instrument of international law. It is admitted that America is much concerned over what has transpired in Europe recently. On every hand, there is raised the cry, "Stop Hitler!" But who considers the sanity and soundness of inquiring, "Who started Hitler?" An inquiry which will be labeled by the Reds and their sympathizers as pro-Nazi or pro-fascist. Well, discounting their childish, unreasonable charges, let's ask, who started Hitler? That's a fair question, and here's a fair answer. At the beginning of the World War, Great Britain, France, and Russia were allied. They were opposed by the Central Powers headed by Germany. For years previous to 1914, Russia had been accused of being the persecutor of certain minorities, thus seizing the occasion of the World War. International bankers, both in Germany and the United States, bought and paid for a revolution within Russia and forced her to sign a separate peace with Germany. And from that moment on, it appeared as if victory were on the side of the Kaiser. Within a year, the Russian Revolution evolved into a ripe, red, rank communism. Eventually, America cast her lot with England and France. Meanwhile, there began the slaughter of Christians in the land of the Soviets. 20,400,000 of them gave up their lives under Lenin and Trotsky and their fellow assassins. From the outset, communism was international. It was not satisfied to operate within the confines of Russia. It sent its emissaries into Hungary under Belakun, known to historians as Cohen. It attempted to overthrow Poland by an unjust aggression. With a program of world revolution, atheism, and anti-Christianity as its fundamental principles, it established its agents in Italy, in France, in Mexico, in Spain, in every nation under the sun. Down with God! Down with Christianity was its war cry. Down with nationalism was its inspiration. Success attended its efforts in Mexico, where, for all practical purposes, religion was outlawed, property was confiscated, and liberty was lost. Spain, likewise, became its victim. These things we Americans know. But we are not so well informed about Germany. Taking advantage of the depression, which was consequent upon the World War, the disciples of Lenin and Trotsky numbered in Germany more than 5 million persons who are determined to capture this Christian land inhabited by more than 16 million Catholics and Protestants. The government of Germany struck back in the days of the Republic. Its blows were weak. Its technique was futile. As a result, communism kept growing alarmingly. At length, when democratic measures failed to stem the tide of this red flood, there appeared Adolf Hitler upon the scene, just as Il Duce Mussolini had appeared in Italy under similar circumstances. And finally, the red tide was stemmed. Communism was overcome, and Hitler rose to power. No one denies that there has been a persecution in Germany for these past 6 years. A persecution, however, which never resorted to the sword. But no one estimates that the persecution under Hitler of Catholic, Protestant, and Jew was as vile or vicious as the Lenin-Trotsky type. Who started Hitler? Ask those who in the first instance contributed to the Russian Revolution. Ask Lenin and Trotsky and the internationalists who spread their poison of hate, hatred for God and nationality, over the face of Europe and the world. Ask those who are responsible for murdering twice as many men, women, and children as were killed in the World War, because for the most part they were guilty of believing in God and worshiping Jesus Christ. Probably they can give you an inkling to the question, who started Hitler? Or again, ask the signatories of the Treaty of Versailles, and particularly the ghost of Clemenceau, the former pagan premier of France, and attend to the answer they will give. Who started Hitler? It was the signatories of the Treaty of Versailles who recognized Soviet atheistic Russia in the first place. It was they who imposed a $57 billion fine payable in gold upon the outraged German Christian people who are not responsible in the first instance for the decisions of their imperialistic Kaiser. It was they, the signatories of Versailles, who drained from Germany its last ounce of gold. It was they who imposed upon the German people the indignities of foreign armies marching in their streets. It was they who made of Germany the police beat of the world. It was they who placed upon the innocent women and children of that nation unbearable economic burdens inspired by hate and revenge. It was they who dismembered the empire piece by piece and evolved a program of encirclement so that never again would German commerce, German industry, and German goods compete with the victors upon the shores of the Seven Seas. It was they who robbed Germany of colonies which she had purchased with money, while they kept their own colonies which they had purchased with the bloody sword at Plassey and elsewhere. For these injustices, the peace treaty of Versailles will go down in history, better known as the Revenge Treaty of Versailles. Who started Hitler? Arrange together these segments of information, and you will discover that Adolf Hitler is nothing more than the logical, historical effect of an illogical, historical cause. Let them who started Hitler stop Hitler. First, by undoing the iniquities of the Peace Treaty of Versailles, and secondly, by turning their attention to communism, against which Nazism was originated. If Adolf Hitler and his policies are the sin of this year, that sin is upon the souls of those who bought the Russian Revolution and its consequent communism, who paid for a policy of anti-God and anti-nationalism to be spread throughout the world, and who excogitated the document of Versailles, which was written with the savage pen of revenge dipped into the crimson ink pot of hate. No one can stop Hitler or his historical successor in Germany or elsewhere until the injustices against God and man are eradicated from the hearts of diplomats and intriguers. And no one can remove from our midst the intriguers until the warmongers who worship the god of gold and through it control propaganda are summarily put in their places. I recognize that in broadcasting these facts, I am on the unpopular side of a question. Probably more letters of condemnation shall reach my desk than letters of commendation. But I also recognize that centuries ago, he became unpopular who was the first to drive the money changers from the temple, they who turned a house of prayer into a den of thieves. I am accustomed to condemnation, accustomed to unpopularity with a certain class which has persisted in making a den of thieves of this world by exploiting the masses of every nation. They are the same ones who seduced your fathers or brothers or sons into the last war, which you thought was a war to make the world safe for democracy. And they are identical with those who at the present moment are walking on your gullibility. Oh, I do not blame the ordinary man in the street for adopting the attitude, which apparently is the popular one. He reads certain statements in the public press and is prone to believe them. But he's not trained to ask himself where these statements originated, nor to distinguish between an official government release and an unofficial news item which is introduced with such vacuous, misleading words as "it is reported on reliable authority," or "it is understood," or "according to sources close to the government," and so ad infinitum. Nevertheless, it is time for the man on the street to recollect how those of the last generation were propagandized to death, destruction, and oppression for having believed the half-truths and the garbled words of those who prevailed upon America to pull the chestnuts of the internationalists from the fires of their own kindling. My friends, I hold no brief for National Socialism because I regard it today, as I've said oftentimes over this microphone, not only as hostile to the Jews, but also to Christians, insofar as it has been persecuting them politically, insofar as it attempts to dictate what shall be taught and what shall not be taught in the pulpit and the schools, and insofar as it sets up its own politicians to be the final court of decision in matters of morality and religion. Nevertheless, since we've turned our attention to history and have traced Nazism to communism, Hitler to Lenin, and worldwide injustice to the Treaty of Versailles, let me reiterate the opinion that there's no stopping Hitlerism, which has now crossed national boundaries, until Leninism is first stopped. Communism was the first to internationalize itself. It was the occasional cause, at least, of Hitler's genesis. And as long as it persists in its activities and is protected under the subterfuge of democracy, so long can the world expect a long line of Hitleresque aggressors. If real democracy and Christianity in America or elsewhere are unable to stamp out the scourge of Moscow, and it is my hope that we Americans will succeed in doing it now that the followers of Christ are aroused, Then some dictatorial form of Nazism will appear here, before which we will bow down complacently as did Germany, rather than be devoured by the red serpent of hate. In a recent editorial, the Milwaukee Journal remarked, "Our old IOU friends, France and England, are in trouble again. They've grimly held to the games of the peace table. We must lift democracy high above the ugly truculence of autocracy," said President Roosevelt, sailing to review the Navy. Lift democracy above autocracy? Make the world safe for democracy. How similar these sound. But whoever cherishes democracy should realize that no nation will emerge from another world conflict without a dictator at its head. No nation will be able to survive the ruin and decay of another such struggle with its depressions, its unemployment, and wreckage of trade, and its destruction of national wealth, except under dictatorship. In these 20 years, we ought to have learned some things. We ought to have learned to be very careful not to be jockeyed into a corner from which there's no escape except through war. We ought not allow ourselves to be talked into a fury over ideologies and other people's ways of government. Unquote the Milwaukee Journal. This editorial comment is a fair expression of the sentiment in America and of keen-minded journalists who fear not to tell the truth. Meanwhile, the Red, so characterized by the New York Daily News, hold their parades in New York City to the disgust of all Americans who are endowed with respectable memories and sound judgment. They are so blind that they cannot see the hidden hand of the ubiquitous internationalists using them for cat's paws to the detriment of our nation. And they're so filled with hate for Hitler that they have no time to consider Stalin. My friends, let us hate no man. And let us recognize that the German people, 80 million of them, who are mostly staunch Catholics and God-fearing Protestants, are well able to care for their own destiny. Time, the healer of all things, eventually will demand an accounting from the Rosenbergs, the Goebbels, the Goerings, and the Hitlers, none of whom would have been in existence today unless the circumstances of Versailles and of communism had called them into being. All these things taken into consideration should incline Americans and the lovers of the Prince of Peace to protest vigorously against this red internationalist propaganda, which is inciting our people to take the first steps, which lead to the ultimate steps of war and destruction. But as much as the followers of social justice are disinclined to grasp the blood-stained hand of Moscow, they do not subscribe to any theory for boycotting Russia. All that is not a step in the right direction by those who entertain hopes of converting Russia. And on the same principle, we deeply regret that our government officials have seen fit to boycott Germany, because this only adds fuel to the fire and gives an excuse to the German government to remind us Americans of the law of self-preservation. It might be well then to ask ourselves these questions. Should not the European nations be more concerned with Germany's aggressions than we are in America? If so, What European nation has had recourse to the boycott against either Russia or Germany? While no person can applaud Hitler for treating the Munich Peace Pact as a scrap of paper, is it not true that the platforms of our present political parties have been treated as scraps of paper, and that the bonded word of England and France, who borrowed billions of dollars from us and promised to repay them, are likewise scraps of paper? As a matter of fact, what national or international document has not been treated as a scrap of paper? As a parting thought, I leave this with you. Already 75% of our population can testify that there's no semblance of economic democracy in the United States. Is this then the type of government that we wish to inflict upon Europe, where despite all her faults and persecutions, Portugal, Spain, Italy, and Germany have thrown off the yoke of international banking and solved the problem of unemployment? It is true this has been accomplished with a loss of political liberty. But, my friends, we in America still possess a portion of that political liberty. We still possess the power to regain all of it. All of it. Plus our economic liberty. And above all, we still possess the will to perfect the theory of all democracy, which in no sense falls under the category of the French, the British, or the Russian type, and which in no sense is identified with the domination of the international bankers who are ruling us today. The spirit of the Founding Fathers is still in our midst. The policy of George Washington's no foreign entanglements is still our heritage. Thus, let us hold fast to these priceless possessions. Be not duped by the internationalists who dwell amongst us. Before it is too late, let us build up barricades to protect the principles of the Prince of Peace, resolve to turn our attention to our own affairs before we lend ear to foreign broils, which are the outcome of foreign injustice. However, bear this point in mind. We want democracy in America, but we want justice with it. In fact, justice matters more than democracy. Actions are more realistic than hypocritical catchwords. A democracy, an American democracy that recognizes the fugitive murderers from Barcelona as the legitimate government in Spain. A government which could not have continued its sacrilege for more than 2 years except for a plentiful supply of American money and munitions. That democracy does not know the meaning of the word. And a democracy which continues to recognize the ruthlessness of Russia towards God and Christianity also lacks a clear understanding of the meaning of democracy. My friends, we want democracy in America, but we want justice with it. Justice matters more than democracy. And there can be no democracy without Christ, and no democracy without justice. That is the conclusion of this address, my friends, which I shall be glad to mail to you this week upon your requesting. may I take this occasion to thank this audience for its generous financial and moral support. Without you, this hour would be impossible. Of course, it is impossible for me to include many thoughts in these Sunday lectures. To supplement these talks and to keep you informed on the most important activities of Congress and the happenings in Europe and America, I edit this weekly magazine, Social Justice, which favors no political party, which accepts no advertising, and which is dedicated to battle against persecution and for social justice wherever it exists. Its editorial matter, of course, is opposed to communism and Nazism both. It stands for the principles of staunch Christianity. And its motive is to restore democracy to America, where democracy is fast falling into disrepute. Flooded as we are with weekly periodicals which are extremely partisan, un-American and radical, under the guise of truth, I'm encouraged to ask you to join with our subscribers in supporting social justice. And particularly, do I ask you to become a distributor in your own neighborhood and to enter this contest for the school children between the grades of 5 and 12, 5th and 12th grades. This contest and all appertaining to will appear in full in next Sunday's Social Justice magazine. I would that 100,000 children and adults will find time to compete, find time to strike a blow for democracy and Christianity in America. God bless every one of you. And now, Mr. Franklin Mitchell.
The Little Flower Male Choristers, directed by Mr. Cyril Guthrell, sing for us Populi Meus by Palestrina.
Thank you.
those of you desiring copies of the address, Our Problem is in America, given by Father Coughlin this afternoon, write directly to Father Coughlin at Royal Oak, Michigan. Undoubtedly, this speech will be the subject of much discussion and even controversy. Until next Sunday afternoon, this is your announcer, Franklin Mitchell, bidding you good afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've presented the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles Z. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan. The thoughts and opinions contained in this address were entirely those of the speaker and in no way reflect the policies of this station. Your dial is set at 1,250 kilocycles.